Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Here we go. Hour number three of our radio program. Game coming up in about 15, 20 minutes. It's a big one. Baltimore Ravens at home going up against the defending Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs. You have the 2018 NFL MVP Patrick Mahomes going up against the 2019 MVP Lamar Jackson. As always, this is the Zach Gilb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. When you need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. Coming out tomorrow, September 29th, it's a new book called The Q Factor, and it's authored by Super Bowl winning head coach Brian Billick and also James Dale. And the idea of the book is that Brian Billick takes a deep dive into the highly promising 2018 NFL quarterback draft class and measures the top five quarterback picks in that draft to gauge how, why, and if they will succeed. And now joining us is a Super Bowl winning head coach in Brian Billick. Coach, thanks for the time. Congrats on the book, and how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. So I know this isn't an easy process, and scouting quarterbacks, you may think you have the answer, you may not end up getting it. But I look back at that 2018 draft class, and you really start with Lamar Jackson. Some were trying to get him to change positions, and then we eventually see him take over, and he wins an MVP. First year also took a team to the playoffs, and last year had a playoff appearance as well. Jackson was the fifth quarterback taken out of that bunch with Baker Mayfield, you had Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, and Josh Rosen. What did a lot of other teams miss on Lamar Jackson? Because he's been the best through, you know, his first 2 years in the league.
Well, that's clearly what the book really is about. It's about the process. Certainly the 2018 draft, which was supposedly one of the best quarterback drafts since the 1983 draft, we use that as a backdrop to really look at the process. And you have to question the process, because at the end of the day, no matter what criteria you use, taking a first-round quarterback in the first round is a 50-50 proposition. And in what process, in what world, do you take Josh Rosen at number 10 and Lamar Jackson at 32? In what process do you take a Mitchell Trubisky at 1 and let Patrick Mahomes go to 10 and Deshaun Watson at 12? It's a question worth asking in terms of the way you evaluate this, what the process is, and where is it flawed that leaves us with those kind of decisions.
When Lamar Jackson was coming out of Louisville, did you have concerns about him, or did you think that this guy was going to be a special player when he got his opportunity?
Well, what we identify in the book, and the book begins by looking at what the pre-draft analysis was, and we didn't alter it in terms of hindsight. It was, here's what the prognosis is, here's what the experts say about these quarterbacks, where they were drafted, and then we tracked them for the 2 years. And clearly the questions about Lamar Jackson came about, well, can that style of play really be successful in the NFL? Can he survive? He's certainly an outstanding athlete, but can he? Does his completion percentage, his ability to operate from the pocket, where ultimately you have to win to be a winning NFL quarterback, would that translate into the NFL? There's a lot of people did not think it would. Others thought that he was unique enough talent the Baltimore Ravens did a phenomenal job of working back into the, and a lot of people thought he would be a second round pick. So the Baltimore Ravens manipulated their way into the last pick of the first round to pick him, and obviously has yielded great success, because as you said, he's an MVP. And more importantly than just picking the guy, they bought in as an organization that said, look, we're going to let him run the ball 170, 180 times on the year. Most NFL people would say, no, you can't survive that way. So far, so good. But like we say, you're going to have to wait and see. It's not a problem until it's a problem, and he gets that hit that does leave him vulnerable for injury.
As a coach, and hey, you take your franchise quarterback when you could get him, but Brian Billick, would you prefer the mobile quarterback in the era that we're now in, where that seems to be the trend, or would you still prefer the traditional passing quarterback?
Well, I think clearly we're
passing.
Yeah, we clearly, you have to be able to win from the pocket, is my firm belief. Now, the athleticism to do some additional things on the outside certainly is important. Aaron Rodgers, who is that traditional quarterback from the pocket, also does some additional things outside the pocket. So you have to kind of qualify it. That pure pocket guy that can do nothing else, that does seem limiting right now. But by the same token, it's not a matter of just taking an athlete that does a bunch of things on the outside but can't operate from the pocket. You can't have an athlete that is a thrower and win in the NFL. If you have a quarterback that's an athlete, now you got a chance.
When you look at Lamar Jackson, do you believe in his ability to win a Super Bowl for the Ravens one day?
Oh, certainly, because they've got the structure to do it. They've got the pedigree, and they believe in what they're doing, and they're fully committed to letting him be Lamar Jackson. And like I said, it's not a problem until it's a problem. He doesn't do it a little bit differently. There are still issues with throwing outside the numbers and some of the completions that he misses. But obviously, he's a unicorn. He really is. I mean, everybody's saying, well, let's just go get a Lamar Jackson. And my response is, well, hold on. There's not a lot of cats like that running around, so you just don't go out and get another Lamar Jackson. But can he, with the defense that they traditionally play there, their ability to just bludgeon you with their running attack, can they be, in today's game, a Super Bowl-caliber team and win a Super Bowl? Absolutely.
The Q Factor is the name of the book. It's authored by Brian Billick and James Dale. Brian Billick is here with me on CBS Sports Radio. It does come out tomorrow. So when we look at the rest of that draft class, Baker Mayfield was taken first overall. He's been up and down in his career. Now it seems as if the success for the Browns is to run the football first and have Baker manage the game. What's the ceiling for Baker Mayfield, in your opinion? What type of quarterback can he turn into that we're not seeing so far?
Well, we've seen both, and that's the thing, that the observation you can make about all these quarterbacks. To borrow a phrase from my mentor, and God rest his soul, Denny Green, they are who we thought they were.
Yeah.
In other words, the questions we had coming in with Baker Mayfield, it was about the emotional and mental ability to handle the game. And we've seen signs of it where it can be pretty good. We see signs where it isn't. He embraces this gunslinger mentality, which is great as long as you can produce that 2-touchdown-to-1-interception ratio. And at times, if the team dictates it, indeed manage the game. He did yesterday, and that's a good sign. Can he do that consistently? That remains to be seen. With Sam Darnold, the question was, can he rise above what appears to be, although he has excellent physical skills and comes from a high pedigree program, can he indeed consistently make those plays and make plays outside the design of the offense? We have questions about that still. Josh Allen was the question mark with the completion percentage. And up to last year, you had to say, well, you typically don't get better at that. Well, so far this year, he's done. So he's clearly on the plus side of that 50-50 ratio that we talked about. Josh Rosen's already been waived out of the league and is on developmental squad now. The story's still yet to be written on him. And Lamar Jackson is the 32nd pick of the draft. So in and of itself, even when we get it right, we get it wrong, because a guy like Lamar Jackson isn't taken until the 32nd pick.
It's not the first time we've seen a bust in the National Football League at this position, Brian Billick, but how does Josh Rosen go from two teams to, the, like you said, being on the Bucs practice squad in such a quick span when this guy was the 10th overall pick in that draft class?
Well, and there's a long history of that in the NFL of 50-50 in terms of, being successful that position or busting. Now, I will say this, as recent history will tell us, the story may not be totally written on Josh Rosen yet. I think it might likely be, but we can take the Ryan Tannehill, who I thought was too early a pick. I thought he should have been an early second-round pick, given his background, only 1 year Texas A&M. And based on the way he performed in Miami, you'd have to say, okay, this guy's a bust. But now look what he's done going to Tennessee and the way he's flourished. The three factors that we come away with after looking at this process is, one, obviously they've got to have the basic physical and mental abilities to do it. But it's that second part of it. Do they have the emotional and mental ability to progress? Even every bust in the National Football League, most of them had the physical tools to play. But for whatever reason, they didn't have the mental or emotional stability to get it done. The third factor, and that's a key one, that's the wild card, is the team around them. Does the quarterback make the system, or does the system make the quarterback? You know, you look at Ryan Tannehill, it looks like Miami maybe was the wrong system, the wrong way they went about it, because he went to a different system and was successful. So you have to consider that as well.
And situation, like you said, is such a big part of it, because, like, I look at Baker Mayfield, they have a lot of talent. So therefore, I look at Baker, so I give him a big percentage of the blame of why it's not working. Where I look at, for example, Sam Darnold, I'm not saying Sam should just be exonerated of blame, but he doesn't have much to work with in the Jets. They're just a terrible situation right now. And you wonder if the Jets and the lack of weapons around him are going to basically put them in a position to maybe take Trevor Lawrence in the draft this year and then trade Sam Darnold.
Well, that's the decision that Joe Douglas is going to have to make, the general manager of the New York Jets, because you're right. One of the toughest things to do is to evaluate the play of a quarterback separate from what's going on around him. And you're exactly right. Baker Mayfield has the tools there. He should be good. They should be able to take advantage of that. Now, the flip side of that is he's been through a number of coordinators, a number of head coaches. That instability doesn't help. Sam Darnold, on the flip side, you're right. That roster right now is just depleted of any talent whatsoever, and they could very well end up with the first overall pick. They've got to make the tough determination. That's what Joe Douglas will do over the next 3 months, is decide, okay, is it Sam Darnold? Is it Adam Gase? Or is it the combination of the two? Or do we need to go a different direction?
Brian Billick here with us for a few more minutes on the Zach Gelb Show. When I look at the Bills' schedule, I circle a game coming up on October 15th. It's up against the Chiefs. I don't think the Bills play the Ravens this year, but how do you think the Bills stack up against the rest of this AFC, assuming that the Chiefs and the Ravens are the two best teams in the conference?
I think very well, because they have a really good, solid defense. And we saw that in the playoffs. We saw what Sean McDermott is able to do with that defense and adapt that defense. And Josh Allen has truly, at least over three games, I mean, you look at the pace that this guy's on. The big question coming in, as we talked about, was the completion percentage, which typically doesn't get better in the NFL. It is what it is. But he has shown this year that he has taken a dramatic step in terms of the completion percentage. When you also add his physicality, his ability to run the ball, I mean, last that game, you saw it going in, I think, for the second score. They got outside the red zone. They ran three straight quarterback designed runs, not just scrambling around, but quarterback designed runs. One of them even a pure option play that tells you this guy, there's something, could be something special about this guy. And the way he's performing on the pace he is right now, you're looking at better than a 600 throw season, better than a 65% completion percentage, 50 some odd touchdowns to single digit interceptions.
Brian Billick, I want to get your thoughts on Carson Wentz. We've seen him get hurt before in his career. Last year, may have had one of his better seasons with not a lot around him, and he really led that team to the playoffs, and then unfortunately had the concussion in the playoff game. This year, all around for Philadelphia, it's been ugly. Are you starting to have doubts on Carson Wentz, or do you think he'll turn this thing around?
Well, there again, it's what's going on around it. You're talking about an offensive line that's been hurt from day one, continues to get more and more depleted, a receiving core that's in and out of the lineup. He just doesn't have any consistency out there. I don't think he has a lot to work with. So I don't know that I'm ready to say Carson Wentz is on the downward projection or not playing particularly well, because I don't think he has much going on around him.
So I know it's easy for me to say because it's not my job, but I give the Bears a pass for not taking Mahomes. The one that to me, though, is that is inexcusable, because I didn't know what Mahomes is going to be at the time, so it's tough for me to be critical of it, but once again, it's not my job. What was Deshaun Watson? That one never made any sense to me in the moment. I'll never forget being in the draft in Philadelphia that night, and when they said they traded up to get Trubisky, I never got why they didn't take Watson. What did you think about that decision now looking back at it, and what they didn't see with at least Watson on the surface?
Well, they weren't alone in that. So that you're right. It's not fair to criticize it from that hindsight perspective. Again, it's what do we look at and what's the criteria going in? Some of the inconsistency of Patrick Mahomes, it had some people concerned. Deshaun Watson, some people thought, well, he's a product of the system, surrounded by phenomenal talent, clearly has outmatched their opponents in the ACC. So from that standpoint, you could look at the two and say, well, you know, Deshaun Watson had all the advantages compared to Mitchell Trubisky out of North Carolina, wasn't surrounded by the same kind of talent. So I think that was some of the mentality and the thought process going in. Obviously, it was flawed. Obviously, it's not the way it turned out.
Do you think part of the process that's just flawed is we're looking for things that are negative, so we see the slightest things and we go, all right, this is why you can't draft a guy?
Yeah, once we get out of the regular season, the college game, and these guys come out with certain ratings, then we just pick these guys apart.
Yeah.
Because most scouts will tell you that when it goes in, at the end of the day, you can love the guy and rate him very high, but you got to find the qualifier. You got to put the but in there, just in case it doesn't work out, so you can go back and, you know, cover your backside and say, well, I told you, but, you know, he had long fingernails, and I didn't like that, and I told you that wasn't going to be good. So, yeah, we all tend to do that a little bit. But that process, and again, I have to understand that the way these players jet up and down the draft boards, and it's become such an industry in itself. Bill Polian called it the draft industrial complex, to where it's taken on its own mentality, and we see players just shooting to the top of the draft and vaulting up these draft boards, when in fact it really doesn't work that way in draft rooms. Yeah, players may move up a little bit, but I think the hype around it, and that adds a whole nother level of pressure for those making the selection as well.
Last one for you, Coach Billick. The game tonight that's just about to get underway, I'm sure you're getting ready to watch it. Little Chiefs and Ravens, what decides this game tonight, in your opinion?
Well, probably whoever has the ball in their hands last when it gets done. Two dynamic offenses. Challenge for these defenses. They can't allow the big, deep pass down the field. But in doing so and being passive, you know, Patrick Mahomes can kill you underneath, hit you with his legs occasionally. The Ravens, if you go too passive, don't build the box, stay passive so they don't get the big plays to Marquise Brown or Mark Andrews, they'll just bludgeon you to death with that running game with Ingram, Jackson, and, of course, now Dobbins as well. So, yeah, it's going to be a great game, I think. And whoever has it in their hands last is probably going to be the team that wins.
Make sure you get the book tomorrow. That's when it's released, The Q Factor by Brian Billick and James Dale. Once again, former NFL coach Brian Billick takes the highly promising 2018 NFL quarterback draft class and measures the top five quarterback picks to gauge how, why, and if they succeed. Coach, congrats on the books. Thanks for the time.
Sounds great. Thanks.
There's Brian Billick. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. 17 past the hour, and I think he's right on that one. I expect a lot of points tonight, and whoever has the ball last is going to win. I did take Kansas City plus the 3.5 points, so I guess I'll roll with, how about those Chiefs? We'll take a timeout. Game underway. Baltimore does have the ball first, 5 seconds in, so I'm sure a lot are going to be having a keen eye on this one tonight. Onsides, offsides next.
Now back to the Zach Gelb Show.
CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, is sponsored by Geico. Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn more. Ravens converted a third down earlier in this game. Lamar Jackson was basically wrapped up, and then the last second he flipped the ball to J.K. Dobbins, who did run for the first down. That was a crazy play. It's 0-0, 10 minutes into this game in the first quarter, and Lamar Jackson is now lining up on a 3rd-and-3. They're inside the 15-yard line, inside the 10-yard line at about the 8. Jackson going to roll out, and he's going to be stopped short. It was a completed pass to Willie Snead, and now you're going to get faced here with probably like a 4th-and-1, 4th-and-2. I want to see if Harbaugh – no, it was – he didn't get anything there. Wow. So I guess they're going to kick a field goal. You wonder what, if you're inside the 10, if you just maybe go for it here with how many points are expected. But I do like taking the field goal because in a game that's going to be so close, you would think. Yeah, right now you may say, okay, go for the touchdown because if the Chiefs go down the field and make it 7, 7-3. You're going to be saying, oh, you should have went for the touchdown. You never know late in this game as Tucker drills the short 26-yard field goal. You never know when that 3 points can really matter. In the first half, I'm always a big proponent of take the points when you can get them. So Ravens strike first. It's 3-0 now. Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs will get the ball. All right, without further ado, let's get to a little onsides, offsides.
Zach's taking on the most polarizing issues in sports. Which side of the line of scrimmage will he end up on?
Offside. Defense number 69.
It's Onsides, Offsides with Zach Gelb on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, Trace, what do you say for me today?
All right, Zach. Well, it's another frustrating weekend of football for Eagles fans as they watch their team struggle yet again in their 23-23 tie to the Bengals. Eagles quarterback Carson Wentz has been a lightning rod for criticism as the fifth-year quarterback threw for 225 yards and did score 2 total touchdowns, but also had 2 more interceptions, up his total to 6 on the season. Now, earlier this morning on WIP, head coach Doug Peterson said the thought of pulling Wentz as a starter is, quote, a knee-jerk reaction, end quote. So onsides or offsides, the Eagles should consider pulling Carson Wentz and starting Jalen Hurts.
No, because I don't think Jalen Hurts is better than Carson Wentz, but even if you do, that's what you're going to throw your young quarterback out to. The offensive line stinks. They have no wide receivers, and their defense is bad. The Eagles should not consider pulling Carson Wentz right now. It's 3 games into the season. They're a bad football team. Yes, he's not playing well. This was a guy, though, that basically single-handedly took you to the playoffs last year, and he's under contract, whether you like it or not, through the 2024 season. So it's way too early now in week 3 of 2020 to pull the quarterback. I don't think they pull Carson Wentz once this year unless if it's because of injuries. So the Eagles should consider pulling Carson Wentz and starting Jalen Hurts. Major offsides for me. No way.
Offside.
Number 2.
All right, so the Packers continue to impress as they marched into the Superdome last night and beat the Saints 37-30. Aaron Rodgers continues his rejuvenation under second-year head coach Matt LaFleur as a former MVP threw for 283 yards and 3 touchdowns as Green Bay owns the highest scoring offense in the NFL after the first 3 weeks. So onsides or offsides, the Packers are the team to beat in the NFC.
Isn't it funny? Breeze and Rodgers both last night threw 3 touchdowns and had similar passing yards. Rodgers was so much more impressive than Drew Brees. Drew Brees, I know not having Michael Thomas is a big reason. He's not taking deep shots. The last few years, towards the end of the season, Drew Brees has not played his best football. You remember the NFC Championship game through that pick. Last year was dreadful up against the Vikings. And so far this year, even in their victory against the Bucs, it was not an inspiring performance. Played very poorly against the Raiders and played poorly last night, even though he threw for 3 touchdown passes. Rodgers and Brees are working with very similar circumstances, though. Both have very good running backs. I would take Kamara over Aaron Jones. And both were without their top wide receivers. Devontae Adams didn't play in the game and Michael Thomas. And look how Rodgers led his team to victory and was the most impressive offensive player and found a way to make Alan Lazard go for over 100 yards. And then you had Drew Brees, who he wasn't their best offensive player. It was Alvin Kamara, who did a nice job running the football and also catching the football, too. So Rodgers elevated his team while Brees did not last night. Now, you asked me the question, are the Packers the team to beat in the NFC? Yeah, I'm not going there yet. I now put them in the Super Bowl conversation before the year. For me, it was the Saints, the Bucks, the 49ers, and the Seahawks. My pick was the Seattle Seahawks to win it all. I would still take Seattle because Russell Wilson, through the first 3 weeks of the season, has been the best player in football. That's to take nothing away from Aaron Rodgers. It's close. The things that still concern me, I'm not saying the Seahawks have a great defense either, is that defense, the lack of linebackers up against the run, and right now that number 2 weapon is not hurting them. And some weeks we've seen MVS step up, some weeks we've seen Alan Lazard. In the playoff games, though, what will Lazard and what will MVS be is going to be something to watch. And can that defense step up and make some big plays, unlike what the defense did last year up against San Francisco when Raheem Mostert ran right through him. So very great start for the Packers. You almost want to put them in the number 1 spot, but right now it's the Seahawks to me. So when you ask me, are the Packers the team to beat in the NFC? For now, I say offsides, nope.
Offside.
Number 3.
In a move yesterday, Zach, that was surprising only because of the timing, the Bears decided to bench starting quarterback Mitch Trubisky for backup Nick Foles in the second half of Sunday's game against the Falcons. Trailing 26-10 in the fourth quarter, Foles threw for three touchdown passes as the Bears came back to defeat the Falcons 30-26. Now, earlier today, as we just played before in the news brief, head coach Matt Nagy announced that Nick Foles will be the starting quarterback moving forward. So onsides or offsides, Nick Foles will finish out the season as the Bears' starting quarterback.
Isn't it crazy? Mitch Trubisky week one throws three touchdown passes in the fourth to defeat the Lions. Then in week two, he was not good whatsoever. The Bears team wasn't good whatsoever, but they defeated the Giants. You're 2-0. I know eventually that Nick Foles is going to see the field. I never would have thought, though, when it came after the Bears were 2-0. But here they are. Bears down big time to the Atlanta Falcons. And the Atlanta Falcons once again choke away a lead. And Nick Foles, how the season started for the Bears. They had a quarterback throw three touchdown passes in the fourth. That's where you see the quarterback change really be solidified. And now this is Nick Foles' team. He threw three touchdown passes in the fourth quarter. So you ask me, is Nick Foles going to finish out the season as a starting quarterback? See, I'm torn on this one because I don't believe in Nick Foles. The Bears tried to sell you as if they did believe in Mitch Trubisky before the season. And then after two and a half games, you pull him. That tells me you don't believe in him. The only way Trubisky gets his job back, in my opinion, is if Nick Foles gets hurt. That's where I'm at. But then Nick Foles, remember, when he got that chance last year, Nick Foles, they benched him for Gardner Minshew. Let me look at the Bears schedule here. This is a great question. I'm torn on it. Colts, Bucks, Panthers, Rams, Saints, Tennessee are the next six games. You'll learn a lot about the Bears. You know what? I'm going to change my answer here. I was going to say that Nick Foles will finish out the season. I don't believe in the Bears. Therefore, that means that Nick Foles at some point is going to struggle. And Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace specifically is going to say, yeah, my ass is in the jackpot here, going back to a Terry Collins when he got ejected from a game. And that's what the umpire told him. Our asses are in the jackpot. So since Ryan Pace's ass is in the jackpot, and Nick Foles is a two-hit wonder, I don't see him being great three times in a row. So, yeah, I'll go offsides that Nick Foles will finish out the season as the starting quarterback.
Offsides.
That could be, as Mahomes just rushes for a touchdown, so it's 6-3 now. Tyreek Hill set that up with a nice big catch. That may be one of the toughest questions I've been asked. That Foles question is very tough. But where do you go on that? Do you think we'll see Trubisky again? Unless it's 100%. Because of injury. Unless if it's because of injury. Do you think just because of performance we'll see Trubisky again?
Like you said, in Jackson, he didn't win a game with the Jaguars last year. And like you said, they benched him for Gardner Minshew. When Nick Foles, for whatever reason, when he is labeled the starter, he stinks. Mm-hmm. But when he comes off the bench, when someone...
Which he's doing here. He's coming off the bench.
But now it's his job.
And also, to be fair, it's basically being like being the starting quarterback because... The other two situations, that was late year, small sample size. Now you got to basically be the starting quarterback all throughout the year. And if you're betting the over-under, you're not going to be happy, even though there's going to be a lot of points in this game. Harrison Butker, the greatest kicker of all time. After what he did on that 58-yard field goal up against the Chargers, he missed an extra point. So the Chiefs, 6-3 over the Ravens. All right, number four, let's go. Keep it moving.
So the rush start for the Houston Texans, Zach, continues as they fall to 0-3 after losing to the Steelers 28-21 yesterday. The Texans, winners of the AFC South four of the previous five seasons, now face an uphill climb that only six teams have accomplished since 1980, start 0-3 and still make the playoffs. Now, there is good news for Houston, though, that they were the last team to accomplish this feat. Back in 2018, they started off 0-3 before ripping off nine wins in a row and eventually capturing the AFC South crown. So onsides or offsides, the Texans will make the playoffs this year.
No, their offense stinks. Their offense is bad. Trading away DeAndre Hopkins was a dumb move. If you want to trade him away, I think that's dumb, but to not get a first-round pick is extremely dumb. And David Johnson, I know he scored yesterday, doesn't do much for me at his stage of his career. And the wide receivers, they all have health problems, and it's all hot and cold on that team. So I know they had a tough schedule. I just don't see. I only think one team in the AFC South makes the playoffs. Whoever wins that division, maybe you go two with that seventh spot. I don't think the Texans, this is their year. I think a lot of people in that locker room are questioning the coach. The defense is bad, and offensively, they just don't have enough help for one Deshaun Watson. So when you say the Texans will make the playoffs this year, I go offsides. Nope, don't see it.
Offside!
And I was the dummy that picked the Texans to make the division, to win the division, just solely based off their quarterback play, because I don't trust Ryan Tannehill, and I don't trust Mr. Rivers in Indianapolis. Both those teams, that you could see that they are better teams than the Texans with the way that they're built.
And finally, Zach, the game of the year in the NFL so far this year has kicked off. Ravens and the Chiefs. Ravens go kick a field goal.
Chiefs.
What do the Chiefs do? March right down and score a touchdown. 6-3. Chiefs are winning. But so far, these teams are now met three times with Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson at quarterback. Patrick Mahomes took the first two matchups. He's trying to go 3-0 against Lamar Jackson. Onsides or offsides? The Ravens and Lamar Jackson need this win more than the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes.
This is onsides because the Chiefs are coming off a Super Bowl victory. They already have two games in hand, you know, in the battles the last 2-3 years up against the Baltimore Ravens. And for the Ravens, I compare them to the Milwaukee Bucks. I compare Lamar Jackson to Giannis Antetokounmpo, where, yes, the Ravens historically have been a better franchise than the Bucks. But what I mean by that is you have a young player, you've had 2 years of success, you've had a guy win an MVP. The regular season, though, for the Ravens and what they do this year doesn't mean much besides the games against the Steelers and this game against Kansas City. And for the Bucks, there was a lot of games this year where it didn't mean much, and ultimately we will see if the Ravens succeed or fail, just like what we saw to the Bucks based off what they do in the postseason. When we look at this individual game, though, if the Chiefs lose, people are going to say, all right, they were bound to lose to the Ravens. It happens. If the Ravens lose, I still believe people think the Ravens are a good team, but people will go, yeah, the Chiefs still have their number, and until they take them down, I'm not going to believe in Baltimore. So, like I said, three games really, really, really matter for the Ravens this year in terms of national talking points. The two against the Steelers, and then this one against Kansas City. Since the Chiefs already have the ring, since Mahomes already has the ring and the MVP, you need Lamar Jackson to step up. And even though this won't get in the ring tonight, it would send a big statement that the Ravens, the move they made in this offseason, did get them closer to going to a Super Bowl and winning a Super Bowl. So the Ravens need this win more than the Chiefs. I go on sides with that one. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. We will break. We'll come on back. I think this is going to be one of the more fun storylines this year. And that's who's the third best team in the AFC with the two best teams in the AFC playing tonight with the Chiefs and the Ravens. Is it the Bills? Is it the Steelers? Is it Tennessee? Is it the Pats? Or is it someone else? I'll give you my answer next.
Now back to the Zach Gelb Show.
Week 3 coming to a close tonight. You do have the Chiefs and the Ravens. Chiefs up 6-3 in this game. We're already getting ready, though, for Week 4. And that's coming up on Sunday. It's an NFL on CBS doubleheader with Brady's Bucks hosting the Chargers. And two of the AFC's best going toe-to-toe. When the Steelers take on the Tennessee Titans, it's in the second game. Most of you will see Cam and the Pats in Kansas City for a meeting with Mahomes and the Chiefs. Coverage begins with the NFL today at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific on CBS. Sunday, Ryan Tracehickey, here are my plans. I'm actually going out east, and I'm going to play a little golf Sunday morning because you're getting to that time of the year where it's getting a little bit colder. Even though today was beautiful in New York, it was absolutely beautiful, but it gets a little colder, so you don't know how many more weekends you have playing golf. So Sunday, I'm going to do the morning golf in the Hamptons, and then I'm going to go to a buddy's house, and we're going to watch football all day, and that's going to be fun. I had an adventure on the golf course, though, this past weekend, which I'll share right now. I was going to do so with stocks, with the closing bell, but you know what? We'll save that really for the sports and football, basketball, and a little baseball, too, coming up in about an hour from now when we ring the closing bells we do each and every day to end the show. So I'm in the Poconos this weekend, and I had a tee time for Woodlock Springs. A beautiful course, well-kept, tremendous greens. On the 18th hole, I hit a 35-foot putt uphill. Don't know how I hit it. I was just trying to clear the hill because the buddy of mine before, he sent the ball right up the hill and he didn't get it past the hill and then it rolled back. So I just said, okay, look at the read, hit the ball really hard, get it past the hill, and it went right in the cup. And I start running around, freaking out, going nuts. And that's how I ended my day. And it was a nice par putt that I had. And I'll never be able to replicate that whatsoever. But the funny part of the story, and the par putt is just me bragging there because I wanted to tell you that I hit the par putt 35 feet out, which is just tremendous. But the funny part of the story, we either on hole 13 or 14. And my buddy was driving the golf cart, and we usually tease him that he's not the best driver in the world because we went golfing in Vermont. He was driving us, and after one way there on the way back, we said, no, you're going in the passenger seat. We're going to drive. So my buddy really wanted to drive this golf cart. And by the way, nicest golf cart I've ever been in. This was Saturday at Woodlock Springs. The seats were just magnificent inside the golf cart. So we're going, it's either on 13 or 14. There was a split in the road to get to the next hole, and my buddy went left. He should have gone right. So he goes to quickly turn around to get to the right hole, either going from 13 to 14 or 14 to 15. And as he does so, he doesn't see that there's this little bunny hill right basically that we're on. I don't know how he didn't see it. When he goes to turn the golf cart around. So he makes a quick turn. And the next thing you know, I feel the golf cart is tipping. So I, thank God there's no seatbelts in a golf cart. I jump out of the golf cart. As this golf cart is falling down, I basically caught the golf cart and threw it back up. I don't know how I did this. I was like Superman. I was like Hercules. And I saved us from tipping the golf cart. And the golf cart would have landed right on me. And I probably would have had an injury today and probably wouldn't have been able to finish the golf round. And then I would have never been able to hit the 35-foot putt. My buddy said to me afterwards, he goes, yeah, if I was on the other side, the golf cart would have definitely have fallen because he didn't think he would have been able to, he's a smaller guy, he didn't think he'd be able to throw up the golf cart, throw it up straight. So I almost got killed this weekend, Ryan Trace Hickey, and it was nothing of my fault. Instead, I became a hero and save myself and save my friend.
Well, I think you're not without total blame. If this gentleman friend of yours is already a bad driver, why would you let him drive the golf cart?
It's a good point.
Again, and as you see,
I'm a charitable man. I'm trying to make people feel good.
Zach Gill, the giver of third, fourth, fifth, 100 chances.
There was no one on the golf course. There was one group in front of us. We were able to play 2-3 balls if we wanted to. If you hit a bad shot, you could get a mulligan because there was no one behind us. So it probably didn't register to me, yeah, let's not trust this guy's driving skills and let me just take the wheel, because it was so weird being at the golf course, and that's how you know it's getting later in the year, with very few people on it. But I'm telling you, the way that the leaves are changing colors on the trees – up in the mountains, it was some scene. It really was. So,
sounds very nice, very fall autumn-esque.
It was, and the fall that I saved everyone's life was also very nice too. Because this golf cart, I kid you not, this thing was 75% almost about to hit the ground, and I jumped out right away and was able to throw this golf cart back up. My buddy said? He said it was like Michael Orr from The Blind Side. You know when he runs the defensive player, the racist defensive player who was just like being a total jerk in the game, and he runs him and throws him over the dumpster? He goes, that's what it was like when you don't realize your own strength. Because basically, after that happened, I just got back in the car and said, okay, go to the next hole. And then I walked up to the next
tee box. Just like nothing happened.
Yeah,
all right, let's keep driving.
I walked up to the next tee box, and I started limping to make him feel like, oh, my hip. My hip is hurting me. And then he started to get really concerned. And I just said, no, I'm just messing with you, you moron.
Was there any like, I'm sorry, wow, I almost killed you there?
This is like one of my really good friends. So usually like you don't tell one of your really good friends you're sorry. I think, I was on like just an emotional state of craziness where I couldn't believe this just happening, so I can't remember if he said if he was sorry or not. Guy's a nice person. I would imagine that he would say he's sorry. You never know, though.
I'd hope. I mean, forget your safety for a second here. Obviously, that's important, but you damage a golf cart. I mean, that's also coming out of your pocket.
That as well. I would not have paid for that. That would have been on him.
That guy not only saved now, injury, you saved him a lot of money.
I have a little theory here. He ended up defeating me on the golf course, but at the time, I was playing really, really well.
Wow. So are you insinuating that maybe?
I think it could have been intentional.
He knew where he was going. Oh, wow. I made the wrong turn. So weird.
Yeah. Skirt. Deliberately hurt me. And then after that, I know I finished strong on the 18th hole, but it did startle me for two holes. So.
Wow. That is some gamesmanship right there.
Maybe we got to put Ryan Trace Hickey and make you basically Sherlock Holmes and become a detective. Maybe you should investigate that with your big trench coat and magnifying
Trace
glass.
Trace is on the case.
I like that. Trace is on the case. Trace is on the case. And I think that when you get to the bottom of this, I think you could see that something maybe fishy was happening. All right, let me get to the third best team in the AFC, because the two best teams in the AFC are playing right now, and they are the Baltimore Ravens and the Kansas City Chiefs. That game is still 6-3 in favor of Kansas City. Who's the third best team in the AFC? Well, here are your contenders. Buffalo at 3-0, Pats at 2-1, Raiders, I don't buy them after yesterday's beatdown of the Pats. I didn't buy them even after what happened with the Saints. Steelers are 3-0. They're looking really good, and they could be on top of this division tonight after 3 weeks if the Ravens do lose to the Kansas City Chiefs. Tennessee's also 3-0. I'm still not in love with Tennessee. I'm not. They got bailed out yesterday by Steven Gostkowski. Jefferson was awesome. Dalvin Cook was awesome. Gostkowski won them that game. The Broncos game was not an inspiring victory. The Jaguars victory wasn't inspiring as well. The Titans are 3-0, and I look at them and I go, all right, I know you made an AFC championship game last year, but for some reason I just don't believe in you. I'm not ready to go all in on Indy yet, even though they are 2-1, and they blew out the Jets. They lost to Jacksonville. Week two, you beat Minnesota. Minnesota's 0-3. So really, the three teams that I'm looking at, and I'll throw Tennessee in there just because they got in the AFC championship game, but really the three teams that I look at are the Steelers, the Bills, and the Pats. And if I had to rank them in order right now, I would say the Steelers would be one. That defense is great, and you got to think that offense is just going to get better and better. I would then say the Bills right now would be two, and then the Pats would be like 2.5, 3. I'm not going to say the Bills are going to be dominant over the Patriots. We got to see those guys still play twice. They do play on November 1st. But Buffalo, with their defense, I think that could be the difference right now, and they have a lot more offensive weapons than the Pats. So Steelers to me, third best team in the AFC. Then I got the Bills, then I got the Pats.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.